This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world. I am Alan Gervy, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And Carrie, who is sitting right across from me, and my mom, who's sitting across from me as well, she's still visiting from Toronto. If you were with us last week, you heard her talking about sex here on Gervy's Law.
Yeah.
Terrible. Poor mom.
You know, I just realized that we're competing with the Academy Awards. And usually we do an Academy Awards show.
That's true. We've always done an Academy Awards show.
Yeah. Last year we had the movie critic and we talked about
it. Yeah.
And today, instead of focusing on the Academy Awards, we're actually focusing on something I think more important.
Absolutely.
Black History Month.
Yeah.
And that is what February is, Black History Month, and we are dedicating our show today to Black History Month, and we're going to speak with three African-American doctors who wrote a book called Pulse of Perseverance, three black doctors on their journey to success, and they talk about overcoming obstacles against all odds, succeeding as doctors, and that will be really interesting. We'll be talking to them after the break. I don't want to talk about the Academy Awards because, you know, we're going to find out very soon. For those of you who are listening, please don't tune into the Academy Awards till after our show.
Well, right after this, I have an Academy Awards party I'm going to run to and hopefully...
Excuse me.
Make it. Well, you know what? There's no host this year. So, you know, I always get excited for the openings because those are the best when people do the singing and the dancing or they talk about every single movie and they call out all the actors.
Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris, an old friend of mine, did a great job doing that.
He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I don't know why, like Billy Crystal, he didn't get a run at it unless he said no. I don't know. Maybe he's turned it down. But he should have been able to do it over and over again. He was fantastic. He's so talented. Yeah.
So what was the point of you telling me about this?
That you said that, you know, we're going to maybe catch up and watch it after. Oh, okay. I said, yes, I'm going to go to a party.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
I'm glad you are. Carrie has a very active social life.
Would you like to come? You and your mom?
My mom, do you want to go to the party?
Sure.
Sure.
Best offer I've had today.
Can she pick up some men there? I mean, after she was
there talking, might be. Hey, you never know.
Any old men around.
just anybody, right? What is it, like 70 and over?
Yeah.
Yeah, 65? Yeah. Maybe, or is that too young?
65? 90?
65 to 90.
It's a big age range.
That's good.
She's available. You know, it's interesting. Today, Carrie, we're going to be talking about these three doctors and all of the odds that they've overcome. And it reminds me of a story I had, and I want to just tell you a little bit about this trip I took to Cuba many, many years ago. And I interviewed three doctors in a cave because they had been outspoken against Castro about the medical system in Cuba, and they were very outspoken. And a friend of mine who I was there in Cuba with took me to the cave, and I videotaped them. I was planning on doing a documentary, and they were talking about the medical system and all the obstacles they had as practicing physicians in Cuba. And it was great footage. I was leaving the country, and I kind of knew that I was might have a problem because of being there and everything that goes on. And this was many years ago. So I gave the tape to a friend I had that was returning to Toronto. So I didn't have it on my person when I went through security. And they did take me aside and they had found out about it. They put me in a room and they started to interrogate me. And they came out with actual weapons.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, put it to my head. And they said, we know about what you did. And I was like, I didn't do anything. They said, no, we know. And what I found out was my friend Miguel, who had taken me to the cave where these three doctors who were going to speak about Castro and about the system, actually turned me in. He was a spy. and I had no idea. So they all knew. They had followed me to the airport. They took me into a room, put a gun to my head. They looked through everything. They couldn't find anything.
What did you say? You said, hey, look, I just interviewed them. I'm going to write a book.
I didn't admit to interviewing them. Because I'm a lawyer, I know that, you know, I wanted to protect my rights and my Miranda warnings, which they don't have in Cuba.
Right, they don't have
I didn't speak because anything I said would be held against me. And they had nothing on me. So they let me go. They went out of the room and I went on the plane, got home. And then my friend Dolly, who I had met, she was from Hamilton, Ontario, in the airport, this young blonde woman who they would never suspect gave me the tapes. And it was pretty exciting.
Wait, let me ask you this. Did she give them to you in Toronto or did you guys just meet at the airport?
No, in Toronto. We got our luggage, she gave me the tapes. And then what happened was, unfortunately, being the idiot that I am, I took them because I want to make a documentary about it. But I didn't have the proper mics and the sound was horrible. So everyone...
Could you have done any kind of like subtitling?
It's a good question. I don't know. I wasn't that smart.
So gosh, that's amazing.
I still have the tapes. I've got to look for them, but it's quite incredible what they talked about the medical system there in Cuba. And but it was a harrowing experience. I did get out of there alive. I remember having these guns to my head and all the threats that were made. And fortunately for me, I wasn't that stupid that I made sure I didn't have the goods on me when I left
the
country.
That's crazy. Yeah, you were smart enough not to have them there. They probably would have just confiscated you, maybe beaten you up and sent you home.
I don't know.
But, and you have a Canadian passport.
Yes.
So that would have been, that's at least better than the...
Well, that's how I was traveling
really
on
there,
my Canadian passport. But anyway, it's a great story and it was a great experience. Mom, you have any good experiences traveling?
Anybody hold a gun to your head?
You have any guns?
Not yet.
Do you interview anybody in caves?
In a cave?
In a cave, yeah.
No.
I saw something on, I think it was the History Channel, and it was like the wonders of the world. And there were these people in Ethiopia that just had a baby 5 weeks prior, and they said that they wanted to baptize the baby. You had to climb. When I say climb, you were climbing, free climbing, with her baby on her back, free climbing up to this church that was no bigger than the studio that we're in now to get baptized by these priests that live in these rocks, but they're caves. High up on a mountain. Hi. And she's with her baby that was just born.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe this. I saw this documentary last night and that cave thing reminded me. Yeah. They didn't have any guns.
Well, you didn't travel that way. I mean, you went on a cruise not too long ago with a Broadway cruise. You weren't climbing.
Oh, that was fun. I performed with the Broadway cast.
You did.
It was a Broadway cruise.
And Audra McDonald, performed with Audra McDonald.
And there was other
that's like two of my
young
favorite
people
things.
People from Broadway.
And of course, Seth Rudesky was there.
Seth, yeah.
Wait, is this real,
and
guys?
And his mother.
And his mother, and his Seth. Mother.
So you went on another cruise.
That was a couple years ago.
I thought this was recent.
No. But it was
That's a cruise I would have gone on with you.
We took dance lessons and we sang. And we performed for the cruise people.
Yeah. It was like one of those things they have like with the Dodgers. They have these fantasy camps where you go and you play ball with some of the professionals. And she was you were right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Do you remember all the songs you were doing? I can't remember what they were, but...
No.
Hello, Dolly. Hello, Dolly.
It was from Pippin. You know the song from Pippin?
Oh, yeah.
We have
da 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 do do do.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Yeah,
we
there have da 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 da
da da da
da da da da da. We've got a
no. Now you're thinking Bye Bye Birdie. It wasn't that.
Oh, that's Bye Bye.
I did Bye Bye Birdie in high school.
No, but she did the Pippin. That was what we got.
Yeah, Pippin.
I wish I could remember.
Well, I can't remember.
Yeah, but that's the one.
If you start singing it, I might be able to get it.
Really. I don't know.
The way he sings?
No, maybe not.
No, I'm just being mean.
That's okay.
I'm the mommy.
If you do another Broadway one, I'll go with you. Well, I'm dead serious.
It's amazing. She's got an amazing picture with Audra McDonald.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was a wonderful cruise.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
There's stuff to do.
An actress.
Yeah. It's fun.
I don't know. Do they still have them, I wonder?
I'm sure.
I don't know.
You know who Seth Rudetsky is?
No.
You don't listen to the Broadway station on Sirius?
I actually have, but it's been years and years and years. When it first came out, I heard it because I had it in my car for free, but I haven't had it.
Yeah. For years. So Seth is, he's the maven on Broadway shows and interviews people, and he was there, and he was playing the piano and directing, and I'm trying to remember the other woman, I forget her name, who is also a well-known Broadway performer.
I know Audra McDonald. I mean,
Yeah,
she, I remember. I don't
know. But she did, Mom, you did a great job.
Of course.
And you remember who your biggest fan was? It was a one-year-old Hudson who was sitting in the crowd being entertained.
That's precious.
That was a great cruise.
It was wonderful. Yeah, it was very enjoyable.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do another one.
Again.
We'll bring Carrie.
I will go.
Yeah, you guys can sing
a
song together.
Find a cruise.
I will do it.
What song do you want to sing?
Anything from, love everything, but Les Mis, I usually do. Anything from Aspects of Love or,
Get something in her generation.
So I can do Oklahoma, Hello Dolly, anything, Little Abner.
You were at Hello Dolly 2 weeks ago at the Pantages. My mom was
How was it? Hello. How was it?
It was great.
Here, sing it.
Hello, Dolly.
It's so nice to have you back where you belong.
You're looking
well, Dolly.
I can tell.
It's obvious that people are turning off the radio.
That's what I was going to say, Evelyn. I swear that's exactly I'm like, there goes our listenership.
Yeah.
All right. I swear we have a good show today.
Tell us about the show.
Well, I'm just excited because I always like when you have people that have gone through hell and back and have been absolutely successful when they could have used the excuse, well, this is how I grew up. And you hear that from people.
Yeah.
Like I did. Tony Robbins tells a great story. He says he went and he visited two brothers. One brother was an executive making a lot of money. The other brother was in jail. And they both said the same thing when he interviewed them. And they said, well, how did you get here? And the brother in jail said, well, how could I not when I had a father like that? And the same brother answered the same thing. Well, how could I not if I had a father like that? So it was like you take life situations and some people will grow with it and some people will destroy them.
And, you know, I think that's really apropos for our guests and we'll be talking to them after the break. It's Dr. Pierre Johnson, Dr. Joseph Semyon and Dr. Max Madir, three African-American doctors who, against all odds, became physicians. And now they are spreading the word through their book and their website, Pulse of Perseverance. We'll be talking to the three authors after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the only $5 meal worthy of your appetite? Wendy's Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger Meal. Our classic Junior Bacon Cheeseburger is now bigger. With double the fresh never frozen beef and double the Applewood smoked bacon, there's nothing junior about it except the price. Wendy's Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger Meal comes with nuggets, fries, and a drink for just $5. Get the $5 Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger Meal at Wendy's. Giant meal, junior price.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S., Alaska, and Canada.
New appliances can do wonders for a kitchen. Right now at the Home Depot, they'll also do wonders for a kitchen budget with up to 30% off appliance special buys, like the four-piece stainless steel Samsung kitchen suite, over $2,000 off a fridge, gas range, microwave, dishwasher, all at once, just in time for dinner. Up to 30% off appliance special buys now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details. Electric range available at extra cost. Valid through February 27th.
Texting enrolls for recurring automated marketing text messages. Message data rates may apply. Texting privacy rules and terms and conditions at textrules.us.
Has dinner got you down? Sick of awful frozen meals or unhealthy fast food? Don't despair because Martha Stewart is doing a free taste test, giving away three full-size meals from her new meal kit delivery service, Martha and Marley Spoon. All fresh ingredients with Martha's delicious and easy recipes. You're eating in just 30 minutes. To be part of Martha's at-home taste test and get three free meals, be one one of the first 100 people to text the word TABLE to 246810. It's so easy. Text us now. Martha and Marley's Spoon Meals are easy, simple, and delicious. And right now, Martha wants you to enjoy three of her best 30-minute meals for free so you can save time and enjoy eating dinner again. To be part of Martha's at-home taste test and get your three free meals, be one of the first 100 people to text TABLE to 246810. That's TABLE to 246810. TABLE to 246810.
Your opinions are at home here. AM 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Wayman rocks.
All right. Hello, Dolly. People who didn't hear the first segment are wondering, why are we playing Hello, Dolly? It's only because my mom, Evelyn, and Carrie Kasem were singing together Hello, Dolly. Don't ask. Yes, it's a legal show. And we're going to talk about things that are just much more important than law right now. And also, obviously, have something to do with law. And it's not the Academy Awards. That's not what we're going to talk about. Something more important. It's Black History Month. This month, February, we are celebrating all the accomplishments African Americans throughout history. And what better way to do that than with the next three guests? And it's odd that we would have three guests. Usually we have one or two, but it's important that all of them have contributed in such an important way. The book is called Pulse of Perseverance, Three Black Doctors on Their Journey to Success. The website is pulseofp3.com. And the authors are Dr. Pierre Johnson, Dr. Joseph Semyon, and Dr. Max Medeer. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you guys, and I know it's tough because you're all in different locations, yet you met at Xavier. Is that where you all got together and became friends, Max?
That is correct. We all met at Xavier University roughly over 20 years ago, roughly 1998. That's where we all met, and from the time we met, we've essentially been best friends, and we've catapulted each other during that time, all the way from college through med school, all the way through our professional careers.
Now,
go ahead.
I was going to say that you all have such different backgrounds, but there is a common thread. Obviously, you had some adversity in your life. Max, while you're talking, why don't you tell us about your background, about your mother and your father, and how you had moved away to Washington, D.C., and how that all went down, and the adversity that you faced, first of all.
Okay, well, my parents weren't born in America. My parents were born in Haiti. They moved to America in the late 1970s. They had my older brother, and then I was born in 1980. They moved to an area called Brooklyn, New York. And that area, the section of Brooklyn, New York that they moved to was an area called Brownsville. The struggles of trying to adapt to American culture while trying to assimilate their own culture eventually led to their divorce. Once they divorced, while trying to put the pieces of their lives together, of course, my older sibling and I were caught in two different environments. My mother stayed in Brownsville while my father had more of a support network to kind of help him finish his studies. During that time, I was exposed to a multitude of things growing up as a child back in New York City during that time. As my father finished his education, he tried to move to Washington, D.C. with the hopes of trying to get us away from some of the environments that he thought might have been prohibiting us from reaching our peak potential. And we moved. He taught at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Of course, even though he was a teacher, he was making, you know, decent middle class money. We were in a decent neighborhood. But of course, you know, trying to go to school inside the school environment was safe. But outside of that environment, you still had the elements of the streets that were still around me consistently. And even though I was very focused on my academics because of what was going on inside the home, dealing with street activity, I almost lost my life a year before I went to college. So luckily, I didn't. The young man who had pointed a gun in my direction my senior year of high school didn't pull the trigger. And today I'm a board-certified cardiac anesthesiologist.
That's an amazing story.
There's
so many intangibles that you think about which way life could have gone. And for you to have been through that, and you're not alone. There's so many African-Americans, other races out there who have adversity. Pierre, now you grew up in Chicago, south side of Chicago. I used to live in Chicago, so I know that south side can be pretty rough. And you had some issues as well with your family and dealing with drugs, your parents dealing with drugs. How did that go down? Is it similar to what Max experienced?
No, it's different. And that's why our book, Pulse of Perseverance, is powerful, because it just isn't one perspective. It's several, it's three different perspectives from a young black male's upbringing. And in my particular upbringing, I had a highly dysfunctional home where, like you just said, both of my parents were addicted to drugs, and my father was abusive to my mother. And I saw this in my home, and then outside of the home, as you know, south side of Chicago. I grew up in the Chatham area, where in the crack era and at the height of the gangs, that was my environment. So trying to navigate through all of that stuff, I had to really look within myself and understand that that's not what I wanted for my life, and that if I participated in anything, whether it be in the drug activities or in the in gangs, that I would be swallowed up, and that's where my life would turn. So I feel that I'm blessed, and that I was blessed with a lot of common sense and very motivated and driven at a very early age. And I knew that I never wanted to be a drug addict. I never wanted to do those things, and I stayed away from it. And I took school very seriously. I was very competitive. I played sports, and I took school extremely serious. And I knew very early on that I wanted to be a physician. And I think that was probably fueled because it wasn't a physician. No one went to college around me. I didn't have any doctors in my family. It was highly dysfunctional. But, the only positive thing that I saw is when you turn on the television was the Cosby Show at the time.
Right.
And that was pretty much the most positive black male role model that I could see at the time. So outside of becoming, a professional basketball player or a professional baseball player, which is what I thought was success, the doctor was the next thing with Bill Cosby on TV. So that was the thing that when my aunt challenged me at an early age, well, you need a plan B, something outside of sports. I just, knee jerk reaction said being a doctor. And then, that just kind of planted a seed in my head. And, when I was 9 years old, my mother was pregnant with my first sibling. The process of childbirth and the physiology behind it was extremely fascinating to me. And it made an inquisitive child even more inquisitive. And so happens that, her OB at the time, who's a mentor of mine, was a black man. And, just not any particular black man. He was one that cared. And when I asked him questions, about the physiology behind pregnancy and things, he didn't, ignore me. He answered my questions. He paid attention to me. And the curiosity from that just grew. And, once I got to high school, I knew that, I thought that being a doctor was great and delivering babies was great. But I realized that I started cutting hair as well. And I found out that I was extremely skilled with my hands. I had a lot of dexterity. And I learned that, the gynecological aspect of OBGYN was surgery. And I realized that, that would be a skill that I could, really, or a profession rather, that I could really exert my skills on. So as I got older and started to learn more about myself and what I really liked and my passion for medicine, it was just the perfect profession. So, fast forward through all of that and ups and downs, trials and tribulations. And now today I'm a board certified obstetrician gynecologist.
Amazing.
And specialized in minimally invasive surgery.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I bet back when you were just starting out, the Da Vinci robot wasn't something that was in common use, and
not at all.
You've been able to do these minimally invasive surgeries with the technology. Just from where you came from, something. Now, Carrie wants to ask.
Yeah, no, I was listening to you, and I'm thinking, okay, where is the haircutting coming in with the gynecology? And I'm literally thinking, okay, does he do haircuts? Does he has a salon on the side?
So if you read the book, like, it'll talk, like, everything for all three of our lives. Like, everything just, it divinely kind of just fell in place. Though we thought it was a setback at the time, everything kind of worked out in a way that benefited us in the future. Like, sure. For instance, yeah. prime example, I didn't, after medical school, you do this thing called a match, in which you match into your profession. So you can train into that particular profession. I didn't match into OB at first. I ultimately matched in general surgery and that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. So when I came into OB, like, I had a leg up on everybody. And then I went to a program in which there was a ton of gynecology, like, it focused on gynecology. So in addition to being a barber, having a year of general surgery, and now going to where I could have the opportunity, it really just propelled me to the very specialized surgeon that I am today.
That's a great answer to Carrie's question. We only have a couple minutes before we take the break, and we're going to get more into the three of you. But I do want to hear Joseph Semyon's story, because it's different as well from Lake Charles. You're at Lake Charles Memorial Hospital in Louisiana, another OBGYN, but your background is different with your family, strong Christian parents, married, and then you become a drug dealer. Joseph, how did that all go down?
That is correct. It goes to show how your past doesn't necessarily define your future. But the coincide of exactly of what you said is that I had a very strong Christian background with my mom, who has always been in the church. My dad has always supported us in reference to the church also, but my dad was a working class man. He took care of a family of six, and he did the best that he could with a third grade education, which exemplified that even in him, something that I didn't realize that failure wasn't an option. But, it all goes down to exposure. So as my life began to unfold and my neighborhood began to change, different aspects of my life became pertinent. And that is at one point, I wanted to do the best I could. I wanted to please my family. I wanted to, further my education. But my exposure led me to a different atmosphere, and that atmosphere was the drug game. And as a large percentage of people, once you're exposed to something as a young child or as a young adult, that curiosity comes about. And that curiosity, what I would say, was actually got the best of me. That led me to selling drugs, involving myself in illegal activities. And from that, that's when the nature of the street life began to unfold. I mean, I seen many people that were laying on the cold concrete, and which I call them dead. I've seen I've ran from gunshots. I was involved in all of that stuff, but it wasn't until further in my life that someone that I cared so deeply about and someone that I looked up to was actually murdered. And when that happened, that began to make me reflect on my life just a little bit more. And I begin to realize that there was so much more that I needed to do for myself. But, I just didn't know how. And at that point, I was at Xavier University, and my grades wasn't up to par. And that could be many setbacks of why that happened. Number one could be when you're in the inner city, especially in New Orleans, education, the school system wasn't necessarily the best. So my grades wasn't adding up to what the grades were when I was in high school, because I did really well coming out of high school. But that led to some sense of depression, because it almost felt like I couldn't make it. But what significantly happened in my life is I met my brothers, Max and Pierre. And what happened is they seen, number one, the desire that I had to achieve my levels of goals. or my goals that I have set for myself. And I actually seen in them the goals that they aspired to pursue. And from that led a bond. And that bond, just like Max said, it took us from the last 20 years going through undergrad until we got to medical school, followed by residency. And as we pursued, now we're all successful in our own way. And today I'm a board certified
obstetrician
gynecologist, specializing in minimally invasive surgery.
That's an amazing story. And, you know, we have to take a break. But when we come back, we want to talk a little bit about whether you guys are really different or whether all the young African-American boys and girls, whether they have it in them and how Pulse of Perseverance is so inspirational and motivational, something that people need. You know, Pierre talked about Bill Cosby on Dr. Huxtable as a role model. You three are role models and you're doing good for society, especially for the African-American community. In this Black History Month, it's important for your story to be told, and we're going to talk more about Pulse of Perseverance after this break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Real news. Straight talk. AM 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law. Still thinking about what can go wrong? Instead, let's get excited about what can go right on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
All right, we're back. Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. My mom, Evelyn Gervie, is here, too. Mom, you're still around? You're hanging out?
I'm here.
She's hanging out listening. Isn't it a fascinating story we're talking about?
It is.
Very fascinating. Commemorating Black History Month. We have Dr. Pierre Johnson, Dr. Joseph Semyon, and Dr. Max Medeer. Pulse of Perseverance. The website is pulseofp3.com. And just before the break, they each told us of their story of overcoming the odds against all odds. And when we talk about odds, and I'll ask Max this, is it true that only 5% of all doctors in this country are African American? And if so, why is it such a low percentage when the actual population is a little bit higher than that?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked, my friend. Well, the thing is, well, number one, it is true, but that number 5% varies from year to year. As recently as 2015, it was 5%. Then 2016, it went up to, I think it went up to 6%. And now somebody told me as recent as 2017, it was 4%.
Wow.
So the numbers are essentially staying the same, even though African-Americans make up 13% of the population. Now, your question as to why, there are a multitude of factors. As you know, one of those factors is as to why, that ties into why are the majority of persons at the bottom of the social order persons of color. Well, there are a multitude of historical factors that play into that. But let's say even if you take away all the historical factors, when you talk about education in general, we wonder why there are only so many seats and so many persons of color at these high levels of achievement for success. Well, it starts at the basic level when it comes to acquiring the necessary knowledge and skills that's required to pass some of these highly standardized exams. if you are at an institution that has access to the best teachers, the best resources, the best books, then quite naturally, if you're a driven person, your odds of becoming successful is much higher than someone who comes from middle class to impoverished neighborhoods where they don't have that same access.
Right.
And so when we talk about equality in America versus equity, I think in this post-racial society, we're still dealing with questions about whether or not things are equitable. And the slogans that we hear from our politicians that are fed to our communities, well, leave no child behind. Well, that's not what's actually going on in present day America. And it hasn't, I don't think, from looking at history or reading history, if people know their history, that has never been the case. So that when you talk about the 5%, that's why that 5%, well, we believe that that 5% remains low. And we can also attest to that because even with ourselves, when people get to read the book, they'll see that even though we were highly driven and we are hardworking people and we are intelligent, those standardized exams almost kept us out of medical school. And even when we were in medical school, we still had some struggles. My brothers and I still had some struggles with passing those exams. That doesn't come from lack of wanting or lack of intelligence. That comes from lack of preparation when you get to some of those higher levels. So there are all these glass ceilings that are placed for people, particularly whether or not race has to do with it, but access and preparation in order to achieve some of the highest levels of academic success that starts, to be quite honest with you, from preschool and the grade school level.
Right. Now, I've worked with a chemist. I've worked with a chemist, Michael Wisner, and he has done tests where in the poor neighborhoods you find schools with lead paint in them. You find apartments with lead paint in them, and lead is known to actually lower your IQ because you are not able to think. And in the neighborhoods where there's more money, that paint has been taken out. The chemicals in the schools have been taken out. In most, not in Malibu, they're filled with toxins. But do you think that has anything to do with it as well? And do you know about that?
This is Joe speaking. That might be one study or some subset of information that could be placed out there. However, it's way more than that, you know.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that.
It's one of those things that, number one, is if you go buy any paint right now, they don't necessarily have lead in it. So this could be something that was from previous, no doubt. But what the main focus would be is the system and the school system in particular, and what these kids are actually exposed to, that would determine how their level of success. And that's one thing that Pulse of Perseverance, what we're about is we're about changing the dynamics on their exposure and uplifting many people to do similar to what we're doing so that, the low numbers that they have of African Americans in actually med school don't become an anomaly, but it becomes the norm.
Yeah.
You know,
and even just that piggyback on that, because we look at that number, that 5% number, and they, you know, if you look at that number, they say black, and the black number that falls, the umbrella falls into anybody of African descent, whether they're in this country or not. But if you actually look at the raw numbers of African Americans that are making it into it, it's even less than that. It's alarmingly, shockingly even lower than that. And it's just all jumped in together. But I was just adding that.
Yeah. Does there need to be some focus on affirmative action programs for admission into schools? Or do you think that it's adequate at this point?
Well, even more importantly, well, this is fear. And I think even more importantly than affirmative action is actually putting the resources so so their kids can actually be on the same playing field. It's not giving a handout and saying, okay, well, we have to lower the bar to get these kids in there. It's actually, you know, putting, you know, educated teachers and teachers that care and actually putting the resources into the school. Like I talked about in the book, the year before medical school, I had absolutely no training. I couldn't get a job with a biology degree. And my only resource was to go and be a substitute teacher. And in that year, I went into a school in the heart of Inglewood in Chicago. And on my second day, they gave me a classroom for the rest of the year. And mind you, while I'm in that classroom, I had students from 11 years old to 16 years old in the same classroom with behavior as well as learning disabilities. There were no consistent books. I had like multiple different types of books that I had to teach these kids with no lesson plans and no skills. Now I'm in a classroom with these kids with not only, you know, behavioral, but also educational deficiencies.
Yeah.
And I'm taught to teach them. And this is happening all over, you know, in Chicago and cities like this. And we're expecting these kids to compete with kids that not only have all their books, have computers in the classroom, but also go home and have, you know, lawyers and physicians and things in their house. Like you have to set the bar so that, you know, kids have the opportunity to be able to achieve these high levels of success.
You know, you make a good point when you talk about the limitations of affirmative action plans, because it, you know, like you say, handout or whatever that is, you're talking about an unequal education system. And when you talk about an unequal education system, you're talking about funding and you're talking about money. So what do you suggest? And, you know, what is the pulse of perseverance say about how you can make it more of an equal playing field by providing the resources? And Pierre just talked about it, his experience. Max, maybe, or Joe, jump in. Where do you see the financial support coming from in order to even the playing field?
Well, that's another great question. You don't see the financial support, which is an entirely different reason why people such as ourselves who come from some of these areas and know exactly what these kids are going through. And because we're on the other side of the spectrum, we know exactly what the challenges that they're going to face. This is exactly why we have our, as a nonprofit organization, this is exactly why we do as much as we can through our book sales, not only to empower and inspire, but also to give back. So even though there are only three of us, we are trying to inspire other people such as ourselves who have made it, who are doing positive things in their own communities, to say, you know what, guys, we need to do more. Right. So we can't, the people who are outside, we're not looking to rely on any government resource. But we are here as voices, essentially for the voiceless, to say, hey, guess what? These are the problems that are going on. And nothing is going to change because there's no money coming in. So what can we do as people, as individuals, if we care, if we believe that America is the greatest country in the world? How do we catapult all of our children to really stand behind those particular ideals so we can actually have better outcomes in our educational system? It's a community-based approach. It's an all-hands-in approach that has to take place. But thinking that government is going to be able to solve this problem, I just don't know if that's even realistic.
Have you guys been approached about doing TV or a TV show? Because I know, you know, as a kid looking up to people or watching people on TV, and sometimes that's all kids have. They have their television and they have the shows and they have these role models. Some
well, they have social media too.
Well, that and social that, media, and right,
that's,
exactly.
And that's one of the biggest. Talking. That's one thing. That's one thing that we see all the time. I'll just give you a little scenario. We went to a school and we asked about 60 kids, what do you want to do when you, or what do you want to be when you grow up? And all but possibly two said that they want to be an athlete. And mm-hmm. some would look at that and say, oh, man, this is so sad. But we look at it different, because what they all had in common is that they all wanted to be successful.
Yeah.
Right, it's just right. that what they're right. exposed to on social media, what they're exposed to on the news, is that success for African-Americans equate to being an athlete or entertainer.
That's
and what
right.
we're saying yeah. is that take the blinders off, and there's a lot more things that you can do to be successful. And then the thing that's going to push you over to give you that opportunity is education. So we push education to the fullest. Now, we do realize that there are a lot of roadblocks that could potentially come about. And it's about us, as Pulse of Perseverance, doing our part to see how we can help to just maybe put a little something, you know, positive towards those roadblocks. And one of the roadblocks is finances. So as a result, we started in our foundation, we started a scholarship program in which we give a subset of money every single month to kids, just to basically push them over to say, listen, we eliminated some of them financial barriers so that you can achieve the goals that you need to achieve.
You know, when you talk about education and opportunities that may be out there, and hopefully in the future, much more of an opportunity for young African Americans, the percentages are greater of becoming a doctor, a lawyer, a professor versus, for instance, an NBA or MLB player. And I think that's what you're talking about, how people have to be, the kids have to be exposed to the opportunities that they don't typically see because of what social media provides. And, you know, we just saw the NBA All-Star game and you saw the dunk contest. And, you know, you don't think about, you don't see necessarily, you know, an OBGYN on TV or a cardiac anesthesiologist and how fulfilling their life can be. We have to take a quick break, but we want to pick up on that. We want to talk about the Pulse of Perseverance Scholarship. We'll do that after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
We've got 2020 vision on 2020 AM 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And we're back as I got a little frog in my throat. Carrie, you've always got a great voice. Mine is hurting right now. We only have a couple more minutes. It's been a fascinating show. We're commemorating Black History Month and such an important topic. The book is called Pulse of Perseverance. First of all, Joe, tell us how people can get Pulse of Perseverance.
So this is Pierre. I'll take over that question for him.
Go ahead.
Pulse of Perseverance is available on Amazon as well as a Kindle version, and they're available there. Can I go back and answer like Carrie's question just
sure.
really quick?
Yeah.
So you had asked us just about like TV appearances,
yeah.
Or whatever. Has anybody asked us about television? And one of our goals, or one of the things that we thought that would make a true impact, is to have a television show. And it's just not just a television show to highlight us. It's a television show in which it's going to grab the kids' attention. Because like we just said, like you look at the NBA dunk contest and baseball and basketball, that's what they see in the media. And that's what's cool. The LeBron James, the Beyoncé's, the Jay-Z's, those, that's what they see. And that's what success is to them. But if you could have a show where they're on the same panel and having discussions with
doctors like ourselves and lawyers like ourselves. And then they're saying that, you know, even if you're not me, like this, what they're doing is cool. And we're saying right. what they're doing is cool. It takes their focus and say, oh, wow, like, you know, LeBron is saying like being a doctor is cool, and these cool doctors are with them, and like this is something that I can actually get into.
And but Pierre, you look cool too. I mean, you guys look cool. You're not like a typical white smocked doctor. You know, when you go and do your talks, you got the mohawk going, some earrings, tattoos.
It's not really mohawk, but
that's the thing. Like kids can't relate if they can't put themselves in our shoes. If we displace ourselves and we put ourselves away from who are the essence of us is, then we can't really reach them like we want to. They can only see what they can feel. If they can't feel us, then they can't relate to us.
You guys should be on like a channel. I don't know if it's BET, whatever it may be, but like doing the version of like the black doctors. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Something like that. It's not necessarily sparkly and cool for kids, but it is. I mean, it's something like that where people can see that there's, you know, it doesn't just have to be, you know, it's not about color. It's not about any of that. And people can look up to you and go, wow, that's something I aspire to be. That's something I want to do. Not only am I a doctor, I can be on TV too. So it's like wrapped up in it's entertainment and with your education and what you know. And to me, that's the best of both worlds.
Well, you make that phone call for us.
Yeah, I'm
dead serious. I'm about to make that phone call for you because I produce stuff. And I'm like, why you guys haven't been like snatched up? I don't know.
She's got her own production company, so she needs to take care of that. And of course, the scholarship. We're going to have to close up, but the scholarship is the Pulse of Perseverance. And was it Tierra Samuels who won it 2019, a UCLA student?
Yeah, she won in the month of February.
We do it
every month.
Okay,
and all of our book proceeds fuel it. So that's what we put our money to.
And there's applications that can be found online at pulseofp3.com, correct?
And I want to correct that before. That is
thepulseofp3.com.
Yeah.
The Pulse of P3. Yep. Well, Dr. Max Medeer, Dr. Joseph Semien, Dr. Pierre Johnson, I want to thank you so much. Great work you're doing, and we wish you all the luck in the world with the Pulse of Perseverance. Thanks for being on Gervie's Law.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Have a great one. So we're going to have to wind up in a minute or so. Mom, you're still here. We want to say goodbye. Carrie, we want to say goodbye for the week. You'll be back in Toronto, so hopefully you can call in future shows to say hello and talk.
Oh, maybe. That's a good idea.
Or sing.
You guys are going to have to
sing.
A duel.
Have you got your...
Have a good flight back
Thank
to Toronto.
Thank you very much. I've had a good time here with you and the family.
And Hudson and Harper and Nancy and Carrie, of course.
And me, of course.
Always happy
and Wayman
to see
in the booth.
So good
and,
to see you.
And Dino was out there earlier.
Yeah, waving to everybody. Bye.
All right. Well, we'll keep you informed and keep listening. You're our number one fan in Toronto.
Yes.
Bye, guys. Okay, I'm out of here.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.